Hello out there and welcome to episode 62 of the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. My name is Rob Schenck.
And I'm Will Smith.
And we are your co-hosts, and we are Georgia trial lawyers focusing in the areas of nursing home abuse and neglect.
That is correct.
What's Will doing right now?
Oh, I'm streaming us on Instagram, social media.
I thought that was just pictures.
No. Yeah, anyway, so Rob learns something new every day.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, Instagram does streaming like Snapchat. They're always competing with each other. Facebook does it, Instagram, Snapchat. I think Instagram and Facebook are going to stay strong for a while.
I feel like Will has the social media qualities of a 13-year-old girl.
Well, first of all, understand something, that my goddaughter is 13,
uh-huh.
And she has informed me that Facebook and Instagram are for old people. So I do have Snapchat.
Uh-huh.
She does too. But she only has Snapchat. Like, people her age don't do Instagram or Facebook. That's what grandparents do. And, you know, her mother is my younger cousin, who is actually a grandparent. So I am old. I get it. So
that's a lot of information.
You're welcome.
Speaking of goddaughters and the younger generation, I would like to actually wish a happy birthday to my oldest niece, who will be turning 14? Is she turning 14?
I have no idea. Are you talking about Chloe?
No, Aria.
Aria
Rain Schenck is turning, I think, 14 on April 5th. So
that makes sense, because I think she's about a year older than Maddie. So
can you, like I remember, like, you know, this is what, like, your parents used to say, but, like, I remember when she was just a little baby.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. My brothers just spent 2 weeks together in Southeast Asia and turned 30, and one of them is about to be a dad.
Mm.
And I remember when they used to call me to help them go to the bathroom. You know,
that was last week. How would you not remember that? Anyway,
yeah. So we do have a lot of interesting stuff to talk about today. And the main thing that I want to start off with is just some potential legislation that we've got down here in Georgia. About a month ago. Back in February, let's put it that way.
There you go.
I cannot remember how long ago it was. I had the opportunity. I know it was around Valentine's Day, because I felt weird about asking her, and then I realized that it was around Valentine's Day. Anyway, one of the individuals that I met at the Consumer Voice Conference that I went to was Melanie McNeil. And Melanie is also a Georgia State Law School graduate.
Go Panthers.
Go Panthers. But she is also the head of the Georgia Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program.
In Georgia.
And just as a reminder, the ombudsmen are patient advocates. So it's anything from, you know, Ms. Johnson doesn't want to be given rice, she wants mashed potatoes, to you guys aren't turning Miss Johnson enough, or we don't think that you're giving her medication when she needs it. So very serious things like that, to seemingly mundane things like dietary choices, which are really not mundane if that is the life that you live. I mean, they are the patient's advocate. They're called residents because they live in these places. So they have rights and they have privileges, and they should be given the same dignity that anybody else does. And ombudsmen strive to give them that. They can go into a nursing home. They can work with the nursing home. So Melanie is in charge of the entire state of Georgia. She works for the Department of Community Health, and she oversees all 150-something counties that we have. She has a few paid employees. The rest are volunteers. Clearly, she cannot deal with advocacy and policy level issues while also attending all the nursing homes in all 150 counties. So she has a small staff. They have a small budget. And they're constantly struggling to provide, you know, advocacy to these nursing home residents. Anyway, I was very fortunate to meet her, and I was very fortunate to have lunch with her back in February. And we talked about a couple of issues that were on her radar as far as working at the Capitol, the Georgia Capitol. And one of those is the proposal of House Bill 803. And it is, let me go ahead and read you the purpose of the bill. The purpose of the bill is to create a statutory prohibition from trafficking in elderly residents. Okay, so it's already illegal to traffic in people, period, right? It's already illegal to kidnap. It's already illegal to is the word abscond?
Abscond?
Abscond with other individuals. It's illegal to, you know, to traffic. But this is something that is happening mainly with the elderly. And it is, you got to think that every elderly person over the age of 65 is getting Social Security. They are either getting Medicare and Medicaid, or they're just getting, you know, Medicare. But they're bringing in a paycheck. And so what Melanie was telling me, which, and this is amazing how much it happens. It is clearly happening so much that they're proposing legislation to try to crack down on this, that people will take these elderly individuals, essentially put them in a basement or something, you know, give them enough food to keep them alive, and they're collecting their check, and you know, they're not spending it, they're not giving it to the person, they're taking it. So you know, if you're getting, let's say that you're getting $15,000 a year in Social Security or $20,000 a year in Social Security, something like that. I mean, that's a lot of money to siphon off of these old people.
Yeah, it's really insane to me that out of all the schemes that somebody could concoct in terms of, I'm going to try to get rich without working mm-hmm. for it, that you would, you know, kidnap an older person to make $1,300 a month. You would kidnap another human being and do that. I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah, and you got to think that they're kidnapping multiple people, so that they may and it may be loved ones too. It may be somebody's grandmother, mm-hmm. where they figure out, hey, you know, grandma has money coming in. Okay, well, grandma can, you know, sit her butt down in the living room and watch TV all day, and she'll eat what we give her, and you'll go out when we tell you can go out, and you know, we're putting a roof. I have seen this personally before, and I understand, or at least I have witnessed this mentality of like, look, we're giving her a roof overhead. She can't do this herself. So we're, you know, yeah, she gets $1,500 a month, and I'm taking, you know, what I need to keep the lights on and keep right. a roof over her head. She's fed, you know, all that stuff. The thing is, you know, she could go to a nursing home though, mm-hmm. and get better care, and she may even need more care. But let me read you what the definition of elder trafficking a disabled, and it isn't just elder persons, it's also disabled. So the proposed legislation would be: a person commits the offense of trafficking a disabled adult, elder person, or resident of a nursing home, when such person, through deception, coercion, exploitation, or isolation, knowingly recruits, harbors, transports, provides, or obtains by any means a disabled adult, elder person, or resident for the purpose of appropriating the resources of such disabled adult, elder person, or resident for one's own or another's benefit. So, and there's a pretty serious penalty here, which is imprisonment up to 20 years, but not less than 5. And if it's more than six victims, 20, but not less than 10. So that's a pretty serious felony.
And that's proposed legislation right now.
But Georgia, at least the Northern District, has been pretty serious. They even created a task force. The Federal Task Force on Elder Exploitation is headquartered, I think, for this area in the Northern District.
And the Northern District of Georgia includes Atlanta?
It's all the way down to Henry County.
Yeah.
Like it's, you know, which is south of Atlanta. It's mm-hmm. a good portion of it's North Georgia.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it's sad that this is something that has to happen. But you got to think about it. If you're criminally minded, I mean, each one of these individuals is worth at least $1,000 a month. You get, you know, four or five of them, that's $4,000 or $5,000 a month. And what do you need to give them to survive? They're certainly not enjoying life.
Right.
But you're keeping them alive. And it's just, it's horrible. And, there's also some other legislation, which is not quite as sad, but it is also sad that it
is necessary.
It's necessary, and that it hasn't even come about yet, and that it has to do with personal allowance. So, residents of nursing homes or anybody who lives in an assisted living facility that gets Medicare or Medicaid services. And as we know from talking with Richard from Nursing Home 411, that we spend about $10 billion annually on assisted living facilities. So it's not just nursing homes, but also assisted living facilities. They get a certain amount of, they're paid, right? So they're paid Medicare and sometimes also Medicaid, to stay in a nursing home. And that money goes to the nursing home, and it should, right? It goes to pay for their care, their treatment, the staff. You know, arguably, from our perspective, it doesn't always do that. Most of it ends up in the pocket of these fat cat corporate owners. But aside from that aspect of it, it goes to the nursing home, with the exception of a very small portion that stays each month available for the resident's personal allowance. And it is a very, very small amount. It is currently at $50 a month. $50 a month. I want you to think about that. So $50 a month, that is what Ms. Johnson has to have her hair done, buy a soda, buy something for the grandkids, anything that isn't included in medical treatment. Her food, her regular three meals and snacks like Ensures and things like that are included. Okay, her medicine is included, her room is included, her adult briefs or other necessities like that are included. But her hair and makeup is not. Buying, you know, little Timmy a card is not included. So all she's given each month is $50. That's it. That's not very much, you know, and it's a shame that it's so little. So what the proposed legislation is that this be increased. Are you ready for how much they're asking for?
I'm ready.
To $70 a month.
Heyo.
Right. So, I mean, you got to think that is, you know, tens and tens of millions of dollars, because there's a lot of nursing home residents, and that ends up being a lot of money. Well, it's not tens of millions; it actually ends up being millions. But so this is a Georgia thing. So what Melanie wants everyone to do is look up who your state representative is. And I have forgotten who mine is. I looked her up the other day.
Isn't John Lewis yours?
John Lewis is our federal representative.
Oh, right. You got
the
state
representative. John Lewis, veterans, civil rights activists, John Lewis is my federal representative. He is my congressman. However, Georgia has its own legislature that deals with state issues and state laws. And I can't remember.
That's a good, that's, you know, that's a shame on us.
Yeah, I know her name is Jan something, and I can't remember her last name.
Goodall?
No, Jane Goodall. That's Jane, not Jan.
Brady?
No. So anyway, so what you should do is, if you get a chance, look up your state representative.
And we'll do the same.
And we're going to do the same. And remember, this is not somebody who goes to Washington, D.C. to represent you. It is somebody who goes to the Georgia Capitol to represent you.
The Gold Dome.
The Gold Dome. They are your state your state legislature. Look up who that is for your area, and there'll be a way for you to contact them and tell them that you support increasing the personal allowance of nursing home residents to whatever it is they're requesting. I believe it's $70. They could be asking for a little bit less now. I'm not really sure. And the issue is, it's my understanding that Governor Deal has approved this. He has approved the legislation allowing them to get $70 per month. The problem is, he hasn't appropriated that money. So what that means is, it's one of those you know, political moves that is kind of an empty gesture, because if you don't appropriate the money, there's no money available. It doesn't matter. So it's easy to say, well, look, I totally agree with this. They should get $70 a month. All right. We now have legislation that says they get $70 a month. Are they going to get $70 a month? Well, no, because we haven't set aside $70 a month for them yet. So, but anyway, email your state representative and let them know that you approved this and you wanted to appropriate it. Because I absolutely think that it's fair that these people, you know, I mean, get $70 a month. I mean, you know, not to get off on a soapbox or a tangent here, but there are so many other things that we are spending money on that go to nefarious reasons, or at least less noble reasons, that Miss Johnson getting another $20 a month so she can get her hair done when she wants and she can get her grandkids some, you know, toys every once in a while so she can feel like a human with dignity, I don't think that's too much to ask at all, you know. So those are the two major issues, is the elder trafficking bill that is being proposed and the attempt at appropriating this money for personal allowance. And it's actually I'm just talking about Georgia, but Richard and I were talking about this off the
air. Richard Mollett.
Richard Mollett of Nursing Home 411. They're also advocating this in other states as well. So I guess moving on from legislation to litigation, somebody sent me a story that I thought was really interesting. It was and it really highlights for me one of the reasons that we do one area. There's multiple reasons that we do one area.
Of law.
We do nursing home neglect and abuse. That's it. We don't do anything else. And there are multiple reasons for that. One of them being that I have a history with it, and so I've always wanted to do it. One of them being that we, as far as marketing purposes, it helps that in a place like Atlanta, you niche in a certain area and you're known for it. And the other reason being that in this day and age of legal complexity, it's just not wise to be a jack of all trades and a master of none. I would rather be a master of one thing, just one thing. Because there are so many things that you can make mistakes on, you know, and that's what gives me anxiety when I meet young attorneys that are hand me their card, and it's like, you know, I do bankruptcy, personal injury, criminal, you know, federal, state, appeals, divorce. I'm just thinking to myself, look, I don't care if you're Goodwill Hunting. There's no way possible that you have read all the treaties and all the laws on all these different areas to what I would consider my satisfaction so that I know that I'm not committing malpractice. So the reason that I bring this up is there was a recent case somebody sent me in Michigan with, I guess, I don't know any attorneys in Michigan, and I don't know who this guy is. Was it Gary Feger?
That sounds about right.
I don't know who he is. So all apologies to anybody that does know who that is. I mean, it's in the article. I don't know who that is. But apparently he's the most well-known trial attorney or plaintiff's attorney, whatever, in the state of Michigan. And he represented a woman who was 81 years old and died because she had some sort of, jaw or tooth related issue. And instead of getting like orthodontal surgery, they performed brain surgery on her. So this is one of those cases that's kind of similar to, hey, we were supposed to take off your left leg, and instead we took off your right leg. But this one's even more severe because instead of operating on this woman's jaw, they performed brain surgery on her. Unnecessary, unmedically warranted, invasive brain surgery, and it killed her. And so they brought a case of simple negligence.
This attorney did.
Now, here's why that's important. So, for example, in Georgia, all of our cases sound, every single one of them, even if it's possible that they do not, we treat them as though they do. Every single one of them sound in medical malpractice. Okay, so it is professional malpractice that requires an affidavit and has different limitations and certain procedural requirements than, let's say, a simple negligence case. A simple negligence case would be, I rear-ended you. Well, you can literally go the next day and take a... you in Georgia, where we have extremely liberal pleading requirements, you could quite literally write on a piece of paper my name and your name and say, I sue this person for negligence. I don't suggest that you do this. This is not legal advice. I'm just explaining how easy simple negligence is. And you could file that with the clerk of court, and you've got a lawsuit. In a medical malpractice case, you have to hire an expert to review it that can look at it and go, yes, I agree, this nursing home failed to meet the standard of care for these reasons. It's a bigger case, and it has different issues with it. And one of those issues in Michigan is that there's also a cap on damages. And this is something that some states do. It is something that a lot of the federal tort reform has talked about, is that in the nursing home cases that we do and in the cases against doctors, that there be some type of non-economic or pain and suffering damage cap, okay? So it's capped at a certain amount. Economic damages, which are your medical bills, are never capped. But, you know, let's say that you have medical bills of you know, $500,000. You know, you would expect that, depending on what happened, let's say that they cut your left leg off instead of your right, because now they have to cut off both legs, because you still got to have your right leg cut off. You know, instead of you getting, you know, $15 million, depending on what your age is and what your profession was, they usually cap it to about $250,000. I don't know what they cap it to in Michigan, but they cap it. So he brought this case in simple negligence. Now, the reason, you know, one of the strategic reasons that he did that was simple negligence didn't have a cap on it. And the jury in this case awarded the plaintiff $20 million. Here's the kicker. It was appealed, and they won't see a dime of it. And they no longer have the ability to bring it again. So their case is now over, and they won't get any money at all. And the reason that they won't get any money at all is because the court decided, you know what? This is actually a matter that should have sounded in medical malpractice, not simple negligence. And because of that, we're setting aside the verdict. Unfortunately for the family, the statute of limitations has run this time, and there is no exception that allows them to bring it back. So they get nothing. And they have nothing.
Their only recourse at this point now is that they can possibly bring a case of legal malpractice against their attorney.
Possibly, yeah. I mean, I think that there should be one. But then again, I don't know all the facts of this case.
Right.
I don't know if he had an argument as to why this should have been simple negligence. But it's just one of those things because it reminds me of, attorneys who might dabble in certain areas.
Although we're not saying that this individual attorney
I don't really know the facts, other than his client can no longer bring the claim and they're not going to see a dime of that money.
Let me just also say this, that Will told that recap that newspaper article very similarly to a Paul Harvey story, where it literally took him 10 minutes to go from the outer layer of the onion to the final, like, why does this have to do with dabbling in anything?
And now,
page three.
The story.
Yeah. So
now you know the rest of the story.
When I was a kid, I used to impersonate Paul Harvey and tell stories.
I hope they were all like, as riveting
like
as that
So in summation, if you listen to all these 60 however many episodes now we're at, as a kid I liked butterscotch, blue cheese, wearing slacks, and listening to Paul Harvey.
So you were at all times a 50-year-old grandmother.
Correct. No.
Or a 50-year-old man.
Yeah, because I think a grandmother wouldn't wear if we still be wearing dresses.
Sure.
Anyway. I guess that'll be about it. I think we covered some pretty good things.
Yeah.
Some interesting things, I would say.
Yeah.
In this episode. Okay, Will. Let me say this. You're walking down the street.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Minding your own business. Mm-hmm. It's a lovely day. You're on the sidewalk. It's mm-hmm. Ponce de Leon Avenue Northeast.
Mm-hmm.
And a person comes up to you.
Mm-hmm.
And that person says to you,
mm-hmm.
Hey, how can I listen to the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast? Not watch it. I just want to listen to it. What would you say to that person?
Well, I would probably suggest that they go to Spotify, because I think most people have Spotify, even people that have...
He says to you, I hate Spotify. The makers of Spotify, killed my uncle. What else
well,
can you suggest
I guess
to me?
You could go to iTunes. You can go to iTunes. If that's not your...
bag.
That's not your bag, man. Then you can go to Stitcher. If that's not, I'm pretty sure that at this point,
Pod Puppy. That's
Pod
a good
Puppy.
App. You can go to Pod Puppy.
We're on Spotify and iTunes, so we're on the top two ones. We're on everything below that.
Right, and third is Pod Puppy.
I don't think that's an actual one.
Well, this is just continuing on that we make up a pod app every time.
Okay.
Okay, so at any rate, you can also watch this podcast at nursinghomeabusepodcast.com or our YouTube channel. And we always appreciate you watching and listening. And I guess with that, we will see you next time.
See you next time.
Thanks for tuning in to the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. Please be sure to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. And feel free to leave us some feedback. And for more information about the topics discussed in this episode, check out the show website, nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. That's nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. See you next time.